From the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, I'm Barbara Caridi, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, October 20th, 2015. And on this day, the Secretary of State rules that Maine Republicans can't circulate just one petition in their quest to get a citizens' initiative on tax and welfare reform on next year's ballot. Rural fire chiefs in Maine say shrinking budgets and a dwindling supply of volunteer firefighters is putting public safety at risk. And Maine's craft brewers prepare to defend their turf amid a proposed mega merger in the beer world. That and more after this.
This Day in Maine is made possible in part by listeners like you and by Lee Auto Malls, serving Maine since 1936 and a proud supporter of MPBN Radio, with locations throughout the state and online at leeauto.com.
I'm Barbara Caridi. The Republican Party will not have to undertake two separate signature drives in order to get its double-pronged citizens' initiative before voters next year. But Maine Secretary of State Matthew Dunlap is advising the party to divide the issue into two separate ballot questions. Republican leaders say welfare reform and lowering the state's income tax are linked because they'll combine to cut poverty and boost prosperity. But Dunlap says the two issues could not be more unrelated. A.J. Higgins reports.
The good news for Republicans is that they will not have to go through the time-consuming process of circulating two separate petitions in order to gather the necessary signatures required to place their citizen initiative on the ballot in 2016. Rick Bennett, state chair of the Maine Republican Party, says as soon as the final paperwork is completed, GOP volunteers will begin the process of gathering about 62,000 signatures required to bring the proposed law to the legislature next spring.
This is about a policy of changing Maine from a state of poverty to a state of prosperity.
The initiative is an attempt to achieve what Governor Paul LePage could not do in the legislature. It would lower the state's current top income tax rate from 7.95% down to 4% and usher in numerous welfare reforms, including the elimination of state benefits for legal non-residents and the banning of state electronic benefit cards for purchases of tobacco, tattoos, or foreign wired money transmissions. It would also require all non-disabled adults to prove that they were looking for work before they could start receiving benefits. In giving the go-ahead for the party to start gathering signatures, Dunlap also made it clear that he does not see the linkage between welfare and tax reform that Bennett says should be obvious.
It will probably be broken into different questions for the purpose of the voters voting on the separate issues. So when we communicated the language drafted by the revisor's office to the petitioners, we informed them of the substance of our deliberations and suggested to them that maybe they contemplate having two separate initiatives so as not to confuse their supporters, because they're very, very different and because voters might reasonably have different opinions on the two topics.
But Republicans say the issues are tied and that savings from welfare reform will boost efforts to reduce the income tax. Before Dunlap and Bennett can even get to a place where one or two questions will be discussed, the legislature will have an opportunity to weigh in. Lawmakers could approve the proposal or reject it and send it directly to the voters in the fall. And that could appear on the ballot as one question or two. The legislature could also devise a third question that could appear on the ballot as a competing measure. Before any of that is decided, Republicans must gather the required number of approved signatures by February. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
In Maine, many rural towns have traditionally relied on volunteers to fight fires. But those volunteers are harder and harder to come by, fire officials told members of a special panel set up by lawmakers to look into the issue. The panel held its first meeting today and got an earful from fire chiefs about budget and personnel shortages they say pose a risk to public safety. Mal Leary has the story.
If you live in a city or large town in Maine, you probably have at least a core of full-time professional firefighters to respond to your neighborhood for a brush or home fire. But in rural Maine, it's a different story. Small towns depend on volunteer fire departments, and volunteers are hard to find. They've decreased so much in recent years that it often takes several small town departments to respond to a fire just to get the minimum number of firefighters needed to handle the blaze. Topsom Fire Chief Brian Stockdale has a department with both full-time and volunteer staff.
In today's age, the complexity of what we're trying to do, even with a basic service, is so much higher than it used to be even 10 years ago or 20 years ago when I started. It's a whole other world.
Volunteers need a minimum level of training to respond to a fire under state law, and because they have to take courses in the evenings and on weekends, it can take months to meet the requirement. Several chiefs told the study panel they see fewer residents able to take time from work to respond to a fire during work hours. And Phippsburg Chief James Totman complained sometimes the courses don't really fit for small departments like his, and firefighters feel their time's being wasted, acquiring skills they will never use.
Some of the stuff they had there, they wouldn't have needed. You know, it's a little more than what you would on a full-time or a big city. I mean, like ladder truck training staff. We'll never see a ladder truck.
And while firefighters need that minimum training, fire chiefs do not. Often a person is elected by the local department based on popularity, not ability. Liberty Fire Chief William Gillespie serves on the panel and says he knows of one chief in Waldo County that has no firefighting experience.
No training, nothing. He's not even never been a firefighter. Walked in the door, became chief, and knows nothing about firefighting, none whatsoever. The one thing that he enjoys the most is running his red lights and siren to everything that he goes to.
The Maine Fire Chiefs Association does have training and its own certification program for fire chiefs, and many take advantage of the program, but it is not required. The panel discussed several approaches to encouraging more volunteers, including tax breaks for firefighters and other incentives. Representative Timothy Terrio, a Republican from China, serves on the panel.
Everybody's problem is money. It's money. Okay, and where's the money going to come from? We can all sit here and sugarcoat this as much as we want. We're preaching to the choir. We all have the same problem, and it's money.
The panel's co-chair, Representative Mike LaJoy, a Lewiston Democrat, says in the long term, the state and municipalities may have to explore the regional approach used in some rural states where a department or two with full-time staff serves as the anchor for several departments with only volunteer firefighters.
Then you've had coverage during the daytime, which is a concern right now. You probably have more coverage, but then you'd have to have everybody buy into it. It's easier said than done.
The panel has only a few weeks to hammer out some recommendations for the legislature to consider in January. The legislation creating the panel directs it to report by December 2nd. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
And now to Maine's Fusion Center. What's that, you might ask? That's the same reaction Hallowell Democratic Representative Charlotte Warren had when she first heard about the secretive agency, which, as it happens, is being used in the state's battle against drug abuse and trafficking. Warren, a member of the legislature's Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee, is now introducing a bill that would provide more oversight of the Maine Information and Analysis Center, its more formal name. She says she didn't know about the center's existence until reading about it after Governor LePage's drug summit in August.
So I started doing some research about it, and it seems that, you know, there's not a lot of information out there. And so I really felt like, you know, we all have the same goal, and our goal is, you know, that we want to deal with this drug addiction problem. But at the same time, I just want to make sure that we're being really mindful of the privacy rights of Maine people.
The 80 fusion centers around the country were originally created to combat terrorism after the 9/11 attacks. At the drug summit, LePage administration officials said the centers now analyze drug activity and trends and share that information with law enforcement agencies. In some states, the centers have come under fire for misuse of funding and privacy violations. Maine's Fusion Center is overseen by state police. But Warren says it appears to have no legislative oversight, and details about its staffing and budget are not available.
You know, taxpayers have a right to know, what are we spending our money on, and are we being effective in the fight? Certainly against drug addiction, we all have the same goal, and we need to know that what we're doing is working. And so that was my interest, and that is the hope in submitting this bill.
The 10-member Legislative Council, which meets Thursday, must approve any new bills for the second session of the legislature, which is typically reserved for top priority or emergency measures. Maine's unemployment rate has fallen to its lowest level in more than 9 years. State officials say the preliminary seasonally adjusted rate of 4.4% for September was down slightly from the 4.5% rate for August. That's significantly lower than the nationwide unemployment rate of 5.1% and slightly below New England's average rate of 4.6%. Down in the southern Maine town of York, the Board of Selectmen voted unanimously Monday to oppose the Maine Turnpike Authority's attempts to move the town's toll plaza 1.5 miles north. Opponents say moving the toll plaza would lower real estate values, create more pollution, and damage the environment at the new site. The Maine Turnpike Authority Board will vote in November on whether to accept the proposed new site as the preferred alternative. Coming up, Maine's craft brewing industry braces to protect its turf as regulators consider a mega merger of beer giants. In the town of Waterville, the superintendent is recommending that Waterville senior high school principal Don Ryder be dismissed. Ryder was placed on paid administrative leave in early September after a complaint was lodged against him. Patty White has more.
The nature of the complaint is unclear, but Don Ryder's attorney, Greg Frame, says it will soon be public knowledge. Ryder has requested that his dismissal hearing on November 10th be public.
Don just really feels, and I do too, that this hearing should be an open session so everyone knows the facts, or lack thereof, that weighed into the superintendent's decision.
Waterville police investigated the case after receiving a complaint on August 27th. District Attorney Megan Maloney is reviewing the police report to determine whether to file criminal charges. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
Maine craft brewers are bracing for a battle to maintain market share following the recent announcement of a mega merger in the beer world. Earlier this month, Anheuser-Busch InBev, the world's number one brewing company, agreed to buy the world's number two beer maker, SAB Miller, in a $104 billion deal. If the merger is approved, the company will own 8 of the top 10 U.S. brands. Analysts say one of the goals of this new behemoth will be to take on America's independent craft breweries, which have seen considerable growth in recent years. Tom Porter has the story.
It's late afternoon in a downtown Portland pub, and Daniel Kleban sips a glass of IPA. He's co-founder of Maine Beer Company, one of 64 breweries in the state. Kleban says these are interesting times in the beer world.
AB InBev, you know, has recently acquired SAB Miller, and this, it certainly is a threat to small brewers. We're at a competitive disadvantage. We're small guys, they're big guys.
But size isn't everything in the beer world. In fact, the recent craft beer revolution has seen huge consumer appetite for smaller, local breweries, at the expense of beer giants like SAB Miller and AB InBev. According to the Brewers Association, a national group which advocates for the craft brewing industry, craft beer production over the last 4 years has more than doubled to 12.2 million barrels, and the number of craft breweries has soared to nearly 4,000.
The big brewers, their market share has been steadily declining, and craft breweries are eating into that market share.
Nevertheless, the small players are still dwarfed by their larger competitors. Maine Beer Company, for example, sells about 13,000 barrels a year, whereas AB InBev brews up more than 100 million. Maine Beer employs about 25 people. AB InBev has a workforce of more than 150,000. The new merged company will be even bigger. And Kleban, who also sits on the board of directors at the Brewers Association, says with its size, the brewing giant could dominate the supply chain and squeeze out smaller competitors.
They can leverage their power when it comes to raw materials, so barley, hops, packaging materials, glass, cans, boxes, anything that goes into the making of beer. The bigger you are, the more influence you have over suppliers.
A few blocks away, the bottling machines at Shipyard Brewing are in full flow. While still an independent craft brewery, Shipyard is Maine's biggest beer producer, making 190,000 barrels annually and employing more than 100 people. Founder Fred Forsley says the industry has become a lot more competitive in the last 2 years, and with this mega merger on the horizon, the key to survival is to engage the consumer.
I think people want to know who's brewing their beers, and Shipyard and a lot of even mid-sized brewers in America are making themselves connect to the consumer, so they understand, you know, where the ingredients come from, where the product's made, who's making it.
Forsley says Shipyard used to be 50% owned by the brewing conglomerate SAB Miller, but he bought back the stake 10 years ago and returned Shipyard to family ownership. He intends to keep it that way.
My goal is to never sell the brewery.
It's a very, very tough challenge for them.
Brad Tuttle writes for Money magazine. In a recent feature, he describes how big beer plans to dominate the craft brewing market. One strategy, he says, is for big players to make their own quasi-craft beers, known as crafty beers, which are designed to look and taste like craft ales. Brands like Shock Top, Tuttle says, which is an AB InBev product. Another ploy is to simply acquire smaller craft breweries, but do it as quietly as possible so the consumer doesn't know they're no longer drinking something that's independently made. If you look at a bottle of Goose Island beer, for example, there's no indication that the Chicago-based brewer is now owned by AB InBev.
There's no responsibility by a brand to state who the corporate parent is. All that a bottle of beer is required to tell you is where it was bottled. And that may or may not give you a clue as to who the actual owner is.
Tuttle says the AB InBev SAB Miller merger can expect close scrutiny from regulators. Meanwhile, brewers in Maine have expressed their concerns to members of Congress.
I'm a member of the Small Brewers Caucus. They have great events.
First District Democratic Congresswoman Shelley Pingree says the caucus plans to address the merger when it meets later this week.
I think what we should be doing is sending a letter to the Justice Department asking them to look into it. This shouldn't be allowed to happen without a lot of scrutiny.
Independent Senator Angus King of Maine also has concerns. Maine's craft breweries, he says, play an important role in growing the state's economy.
I'm concerned, therefore, that the merger of two of the world's largest beer companies could threaten that success by stymieing the growth of small brewers and crowding out their products in Maine and elsewhere.
King says he's asked the U.S. Department of Justice to take a close look at how the public interest would be affected by the merger. Anheuser-Busch InBev did not respond to a request for comment for this story. For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
Summer is over, but concern about deer ticks remains. Lyme disease researchers at the Maine Medical Center Research Institute say October is the peak season for adult deer ticks in Maine, and as many as half of them might be infected with the Lyme bacterium and other diseases. With dog ticks in hibernation, any tick found in southern Maine will almost certainly be a deer tick, and they could look different than people expect, says vector ecologist Chuck Lubelzik.
This time of year, the deer ticks that are out are much larger, and a lot of the public health messaging that comes out does concern deer ticks that are out in the summertime when they're quite small. The concern is that many people that might be finding larger ticks this time of year won't realize they're deer ticks and will just discard them or not be that concerned about them.
Institute officials say about 13,000 people contracted Lyme disease in Maine in 2014. And that's the news on This Day in Maine, Tuesday, October 20th, 2015. Our theme music was composed by Robert Holt. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall and Susan Sharon, and to A.J. Higgins, Mal Leary, Tom Porter, Ed Morin, and Nora Flaherty for their contributions. We'd like to know what you think about the program. You can let us know by emailing us at tdim@mpbn.net. And today on Maine Calling, the topic was near-death experiences. If you missed it, you can listen online at mainecalling.net. I'm Barbara Caritti. For all of us here at MPBN News, thanks for listening. Oh,